This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about the law, immigration in this country, how Democrats stand up for their side and we do not. What's going on at the Supreme Court? Some big things are about to happen. John Phillips talks about the next presidential race. I know it's crazy. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk about our system and how screwed up and crazy our system is in this country. And here's an example I'll use from my own personal life. This was a few years ago. We were having a Marine Corps little get-together from me and some of my Marine buddies were getting together. And we're going to go out and just play a round of golf. That's all. Just catch up on old times, a couple beers, you know, normal things. And one of my buddies initially said he wasn't going to come. He wasn't going to be able to come. And then finally, he texts us the day before and he says, "Hey, I have great news, buddy. I begged my wife and she's going to allow me to come golfing with you guys." And of course, for him, he felt like this was a huge win. This is great. He gets to come golfing. But for us, we were universally mortified by all this. Your wife allowed you to go golfing with guys you fought in a war with? And you think that's a win? I think about that when I look at what's happening in the country right now. For instance, right now we have a judge who has backed Trump's use of the Alien Enemies Act. Trump, you know, used the Alien Enemies Act to deport these gang members. He's saying, hey, MS-13, that's a terrorist organization, so I'm going to use the Alien Enemies Act to kick these people out. Well, the court system stepped up. Another judge stepped up and said, no, you can't do that. And so now we have another judge who steps in and says, no, actually, you can do that. And I'm supposed to celebrate this as some sort of a win? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm happy the deportations are about to commence, but where does that put us as a country where deporting illegal alien gang members, druggies, rapists, murderers, thieves, we have to get special permission from a random judge you've never heard of before to allow the United States president to deport illegals? And I'm supposed to what? I'm supposed to sit here and cheer? I don't think I'm going to be cheering because I don't think that says much about where we are as a country. Frankly, I think we're in a whole lot of trouble. And now, Trump has to ask the Supreme Court for things or try to demand, hey, but we really need you to allow us to do this. And it's always something that's obviously his job and obviously constitutional. But what does that say about us as a country? We have a criminal organization known as the Democrat Party in the United States government operating openly here, and the judicial system seems to be dedicated to allowing them to do it. And to be honest with you, I'm shocked we even got one arrested. Remember that Wisconsin judge helped an illegal alien escape ICE? And of course, now she's facing jail time, but let's talk about that for a moment. Let's talk about what a step that was. Some communist street animal tries to get an illegal alien out of custody. You wouldn't be shocked, and I wouldn't be shocked. These people are stupid, mentally ill, on welfare, have nothing to live for, so they're going to go do these stupid criminal acts. This lady has worked her way through law school, worked her way up through the legal system, and now is a judge. And she thought she was going to be okay springing an illegal from ICE custody? What does that say about where we are as a country? About the divide between the two parties. I mean, let's talk about that. You know, the mayor of Newark was arrested for protesting outside of an ICE facility. And a bunch of Democrat members of Congress showed up and started assaulting federal agents at the ICE facility. Now, we'll get to Kristi Noem's comments about that in just a moment, but just pause and think about that for a moment. Just pause and think about where we are. There are two major political parties. I realize there are other parties exist, but there are two major ones. And one of the two political parties, it is completely dedicated to keeping illegal aliens in the country. How do we survive that? I'm supposed to celebrate that? Kristi Noem was talking about it, said this.
We had members of Congress assaulting law enforcement officers. They were cooperating with criminals to create criminal acts, and then they're saying that they were providing oversight. This wasn't oversight. This was committing felonies.
So you're saying if members of Congress break the law, they're not going to get special treatment. They're going to be treated like any other U.S. citizen. If they break the law, they're going to pay the price.
Well, that's up to the Department of Justice.
It's up to the Department of Justice. I'm glad she threw that out there, you see, because I've been thinking a lot about those Democrat members of Congress. Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson has talked about them and, well, maybe we can expel them off committees, and I'm not sure about this, I'm not sure about that. We're looking into every option, getting a whole lot of hand-wringing over the whole thing, but that's funny. Remember George Santos? Maybe you're not a George Santos fan. I don't know him. I'm not a fan. I don't know the guy, but George Santos had accusations against him. Accusations, at the time, unproven accusations against him, corruption, things like that. The GOP-led House, not Democrats, Republicans in the House of Representatives, they didn't just put out a statement. They didn't just kick him off committees. They expelled him from the United States House of Representatives. So when faced with potential corruption, Republicans immediately kicked out one of their own members and narrowed our majority in Congress. That's how our side fights. Would you like to see how their side fights? Here was AOC.
And now what DHS is trying to say, again, they're using public intimidation because they know that they cannot come for us all. They know that they are not, that they cannot come for us all. And recently what they said is that DHS is allegedly looking into arresting members of Congress who were showing up for their legal and constitutional obligation to conduct oversight. If anyone's breaking the law in this situation, it's not members of Congress, it's the Department of Homeland Security. It's people like Tom Homan and Secretary Kristi Noem. You lay a finger on someone, on Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, on Representative or any of the representatives that were there, you lay a finger on them, we are going to have a problem.
Immediately, they lock shields and issue threats. Don't think this was just AOC being a wingnut. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries said the same thing.
There was this incident in Newark. You said they better not touch our members.
Correct.
What happens if they were to go and arrest these members or if they would try to sanction them during the House of Representatives?
They'll find out.
What would you do?
They'll find out.
I mean, but doesn't that broach a...
They'll find out.
Doesn't that go across...
That's a red line.
What's the red line, though? I mean, I know we have this...
It's a red line. It's very clear.
That's why the country's only moved to the left. I'm mortified by where we are. Whatever, let's move off of this stuff. I want to talk about many other things tonight. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Let me get you comfortable with buying a new watch. After all, everybody's got a birthday coming. Father's Day, we just had Mother's Day. There's always a reason to get yourself a nice watch, especially when it's a Wasson watch, you see. Wasson watch is more than just a great watch. These Swiss-made watches, they're awesome, but they're a company that shares our values, that promotes our values. This is a company that, without shame, speaks about God, country, run by a veteran, United States Marine Corps veteran, Semper Fi, by the way, Paul. This is a wonderful company, wonderful people making the best watches ever, and I'm not even a watch guy. I proudly wear my Wasson everywhere because of what they represent. And it looks pretty good, too. My wife loves it. Want a discount on one? WassonWatch.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back. Birthright citizenship. You are about to hear that term a lot in the coming week. And so let's just get something out of the way right off the bat. I really don't care about what anybody says about the issue. It's completely insane for a country to automatically grant citizenship because an illegal hopped the border and had a baby in the country. That is such a bonkers way to handle immigration, citizenship. It's such a degrading way to handle the citizenship of a country. Yet that has been established policy in the United States of America for a very long time. Trump is challenging it, and good for Trump. What's the Supreme Court gonna do? What's the history behind all this? I don't freaking know. Let's talk to Josh. Joining me now, my buddy Josh Hammer, host of the Josh Hammer Show, and of course, author of that wonderful book, Israel and Civilization. Hey, Josh, before we get into the idiot Supreme Court, can you give us a little bit of background on this whole 14th Amendment thing?
Sure, of course. So, Jesse, I hate to disappoint you, my good friend, but just for your viewers' awareness, unfortunately, they're not really debating the 14th Amendment issue at the Supreme Court. This is basically going to be an oral argument about the scope of the so-called nationwide injunction. So I care a lot about the birthright citizenship issue, and let's go ahead and talk about it. But we're primarily dealing here with the nationwide injunction, which is a very, very, very important issue in its own right. And I think that SCOTUS is probably well primed to narrow the limits of what these rogue lower court judges can and cannot rule when it comes to the scope of the injunction. But with that, you know, important caveat aside, let's talk about the 14th Amendment there. So the 14th Amendment begins with the citizenship clause. So the very first clause is the citizenship clause, which famously includes this qualifier. It says that all persons born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are hereby citizens of the United States. Now, the purpose of this clause is to overturn probably the single worst Supreme Court opinion in the entire history of the Supreme Court, the 1857 case called Dred Scott, which infamously held that black people are not citizens, can never be citizens there. That was the purpose there. The key thing that is important for purposes of the substantive debate in the 14th Amendment is that qualifier subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Now, for most of the past century, call it a little over a century, close to a century and a half now at this point, actually, most people have read that jurisdiction as just being like, okay, well, if you murder someone, then you can be arrested for that crime, therefore you are in the jurisdiction. So by that reading of what it means to be subject to the jurisdiction, Jesse, then any alien, legal or illegal, would be subject to the jurisdiction, because if an illegal alien is here and happens to murder someone, guess what? That alien's going to be arrested there. However, I and many others have long argued that is not the proper reading of subject to the jurisdiction thereof, because the way that the framers used this phrase here, they were talking not just about territorial jurisdiction, they were talking about something that we might refer to as political jurisdiction, as owing your allegiance to a certain sovereign. In fact, if you actually go back and look at what they were trying to do, the 14th Amendment was ratified in 1868. They were actually really just trying to constitutionalize the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which was passed by Congress 2 years prior. And the drafters were actually a lot clearer. They said any person born or naturalized in the United States and not subject to a foreign power is therefore a citizen of the United States there. So the better way to read this, Jesse, the best way to read the 14th Amendment here is basically saying that you only automatically get birthright citizenship if you are not subject to a foreign power. So I would take it even further and say that a proper reading of this clause means that the only people that are constitutionally required to get birthright citizenship are people that are born here to U.S. citizens. I would argue that even the children of legal aliens, you're on a green card here, Congress can give you birthright citizenship. In fact, maybe they actually even should, but even that is actually not technically constitutionally required. But the notion that you would automatically get birthright citizenship as a children of an illegal alien is flabbergasting. That would have completely dumbfounded the very wise men who wrote this amendment in 1868.
Okay, so how did we get here then? How did we get it's obvious to everybody. It's obvious legally. It's obvious to just common sense people. So how do we get to the place where we have millions of people hopping the border, crapping out a kid, and now the kid's a citizen? How did that happen?
Look, Jesse, I mean, first of all, it's not even a legal disaster. As you accurately point out, it's an absolute policy and moral disaster. I mean, we literally have an entire birth tourism industry here. I know that because we just had our first child last December. And when I went with my wife to the OBGYN here in South Florida, where we live, you literally see foreign people, especially here in Florida, with a lot of Russian-speaking folks from Eastern Europe that are literally just here for purposes of getting a visa on their 8th, 9th month of pregnancy to pop out a child. So it's completely insane. I mean, it is an absolutely insane policy, to say nothing of the way that it incentivizes the coyotes and the cartels down in northern Mexico to transport vulnerable young women in the 7th, 8th month of pregnancy to get across the border. It's totally nuts. The basic way that we got here is that, so for the first two and a half, three decades after the 14th Amendment was ratified, so we're talking here of the late 19th century, the Supreme Court actually got it right. In fact, the very first time that the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment is actually explained is in an 1871 case called the Slaughterhouse Cases. And there, Justice Samuel Miller reads it in the correct way, this notion of complete jurisdiction, political allegiance, and so forth. It starts to go off the rails a little bit in an 1898 case out of San Francisco called Wong Kim Ark. So the fact pattern in Wong Kim Ark, though, Jesse, is actually very important. So in Wong Kim Ark, the fact pattern is that you have Chinese aliens here. So people who are citizens of China, they are subject to what was then the King of China, the Emperor of China. But they're here legally. They're not illegal aliens. So there, the relevant legal question was, does this child get 14th Amendment birthright citizenship? And the reason, the answer should have been no, for the reasons that I just gave there, is that even a legal alien does not have complete jurisdiction, political allegiance. But even in this opinion, and even in this opinion from Justice Horace Gray, which the liberals love to quote here, he goes over and over and over again and makes a repeated point of emphasizing that the Chinese alien here was actually a domicile, had a legal permanent residence in San Francisco. Put another way, even the case that the liberals love to cite on this point, Wong Kim Ark, only stands for the proposition that the children of legal aliens have birthright citizenship. It says nothing about the children of illegal aliens. Where it goes off the rails even further is 84 years after that, in a case out of your state of Texas called Plyler versus Doe in 1982, you had one of the most liberal justices of the entire 20th century, Justice William Brennan, who literally drops in a footnote. And anyone who reads cases knows that footnotes are not legally binding. This is what lawyers call dicta. He literally drops in a footnote, a very liberal justice, and says, oh, by the way, Wong Kim Ark established that everyone gets birthright citizenship. Well, no, you freaking moron. It didn't establish that, because they said time and time again, it has to do with those who are domiciled here, legal aliens, not illegal aliens. But for whatever reason, Jesse, ever since Wong Kim Ark, especially ever since Plyler versus Doe, people just automatically assume that the birthright citizenship clause guarantees that anyone born here gets citizenship. It is a misreading. It is historically illiterate. It's legally illiterate. And it's had absolutely disastrous policy ramifications as well.
All right, Josh, so you mentioned they are dealing with the nationwide injunctions, and dare I say you sounded a little bit hopeful. What's going to happen?
Yeah, so I'm actually much more hopeful on the injunction piece of the puzzle than the birthright citizenship. So, you know, as convinced as I am that what I'm arguing is correct on the birthright citizenship point, Jesse, I don't think, unfortunately, that there are 5 votes for that proposition. I genuinely don't. I think you're looking at literally probably 2, Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito at the most. It actually wouldn't shock me if even one of them disagreed there, because this is one of those things that's just become so well ingrained that even very, very smart, very conservative, very originalist justices have become convinced that this is actually a very close call. So I'm actually, unfortunately, not optimistic on the actual substantive 14th Amendment question, but I am optimistic on the nationwide injunction issue, because there, you're being asked to basically define what is and what is not the judicial power in which Article 3 of the Constitution speaks. And here, Jesse, there's only a very, very recent history of these so-called nationwide injunctions. The very first so-called nationwide injunction literally didn't happen until the late 1960s. It was like the Lyndon Johnson or the Richard Nixon presidency, and they didn't proliferate until the first Trump presidency. Donald Trump, when he was president the first time, from 2017 to 2021, faced more nationwide injunctions than the first 44 presidents combined. So this is a much more recent phenomenon. It is risibly unconstitutional. The judicial power of the United States clearly only comprises the ability to issue a judgment, a ruling that binds the named parties to a lawsuit. And more generally speaking, when it comes to these very structural constitutional questions, Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, separation of powers, checks and balances, these are typically the kind of questions, Jesse, where I actually have faith in even the more, well, I have some faith, let's say, in even the more moderate justices here, Kavanaugh, Barrett, John Roberts there. All else considered, they're better on these questions than on these kind of, you know, let's say kind of race-adjacent questions such as birthright citizenship.
Ugh. Okay, well, that's something, I guess. Josh, as always, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. All right. We've talked for a long time about government corruption and kind of how it works, how Congress authorizes this new department and funds for this new department, and the department hands out grants to this group and that NGO and this group, and of course, all the money ends up going to somebody's cousin's brother's uncle, right? It never goes to the sick puppy group that they said they set up. Luke Rezaik exposed one of these things, and man, your jaw's gonna drop. Before we get to Luke, let me talk to you about chalk. Let me talk to you about feeling good. Natural herbal supplements. Not pharmaceutical garbage. Natural supplements are what we need to look to first. That's what chalk does, the best I've ever seen in my life. Whatever you're looking for, whoever you are, old, young, man, woman, chalk has something that will improve your life. Me personally, I take a male vitality stack every single day. There are female vitality stacks. There's endless stuff there, but you want to feel good and support a company who shares our values? American company, chalk. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV for a huge discount. We'll be back. Well, like we talked about, it's not a secret that the modern-day Democrat Party despises white people. In case you were on the fence about that, I think the news coverage of those 50 Afrikaners showing up pretty much confirmed what everyone already knew. Democrats view white people as the enemy. It's a really gross place to look at society in that way. This color is bad and this color is good, but that's where we are. But it goes to more than just news stories, you see. It's your money is flowing to this kind of hatred. We'll talk to Luke Rezaik about that right about now. Joining me now, Luke Rezaik, government efficiency reporter for the Daily Wire, always finding good dirt on all these dirty communists. Hey, Luke, what exactly is, I want to make sure I get this right, the African Development Foundation? That sounds like a nice place.
Yeah, it's like kind of like USAID's little brother, and it's supposed to give money, charitable grants to Africa. But it turns out what it was doing is it was having Africa secretly send some of that money back to them under the table, including wiring money directly to DC bureaucrats' personal bank accounts.
Okay, now I needed to go ahead and unpack everything you just said for me right there. Wait, what? We're sending money to Africa and it's coming back to DC? Okay, the story is yours, the floor is yours. What?
So they're only allowed by law to give grants to Africa, and obviously they want to make it seem like they have very low overhead. And so they'd give grants and they would kind of make agreements with these African grantees that then we're going to tell you, you're going to have to wire money to different places and you're going to have to do it. So if you've ever got those emails from the Nigerian princes that promise you that you're going to wire money if you give them your bank account, they actually figured out how to do this. So there are bureaucrats in D.C. working at the office at the headquarters of this government agency who are getting wires from like random LLCs in Nigeria. So Congress thinks the money has been given to Nigeria to help the poor orphans or whatever, but it's really helping them buy a new Mercedes-Benz to drive around in the Maryland suburbs of D.C. And so in one case, it's a criminal investigation going on into the chief financial officer of this agency, a guy named Matthew Zahu, who's an African immigrant himself. He was giving money to this company that purported to be an African company. Well, that was actually his friend, another African-American, if you will, who was working at the Department of Veterans Affairs, living in the D.C. suburbs, and then created this Kenyan firm that was receiving money from the government agency. And every time it got a contract, he would send money to his buddy, the chief financial officer of this agency who was giving him the contracts. So it sure looks like criminal kickbacks to steer government contracts to his friend. And the USAID Inspector General executed a search warrant like right before the election. So this dude hasn't been arrested yet, but a lot of strange contracts going out for reasons that can't be explained. Things like travel costs during COVID when nobody was traveling. It seems like criminal kickbacks may be the explanation. There may be an arrest coming. It hasn't come yet. In other cases, they would give grants that the Africans didn't want on the condition that they send some of the subcontract that money back to the boss's friends or the boss's former employer here in D.C. So they were trying to give out grants to for COVID masks. And these people in Kenya were like, we don't need COVID masks. We already have a ton of free masks. And they were like, well, you're going to do this grant anyway. So they're like foisting aid on Africans that they don't even want because the purpose is to route it back to the D.C. bureaucrats.
Good freaking grief. Look, I'm not even shocked, but just hearing you lay it out is so unbelievably gross. So I have a kind of a weird, stupid detail to ask about this, but I am curious. On the African side, are there people on the African side aiding this, or is this all out of Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's funny because they train the Africans. They try to make them less corrupt. So they're like, oh, here in America, we do things like if you're going to give out contracts, you know, you've got to get multiple bids. And so there's basically testimony from these employees from this D.C. agency talking about how the Americans were actually trying to get the Africans to be corrupt. And the Africans were like, well, this doesn't sound right. We should certainly compete a contract if we're going to give it out, not give it out to the CEO of this American company's friend. And so this lady is talking about how uncomfortable it made her feel that this situation has basically become reversed. But essentially, yeah, I mean, the African companies and grantees, they got to keep some of the money, and in exchange, they had to give a portion of it back and wire it to different places at the direction of these government administrators. And one of them was, a guy named C.D. Glynn, who had been a DEI officer for the Peace Corps, and then a Joe Biden appointee, and then eventually he was succeeded by a guy named Travis Adkins, who was also a political appointee by Joe Biden to USAID. That dude hadn't paid his taxes, and there's a sworn affidavit from a black staff member at this agency that said that the CEO of this agency refused to hire any white people, refused to hire veterans. And so there's all kinds of sordid tales about how abusive these people were to their staff. We're told, and first we got to back up, the reason that all this came to my attention is because this agency did not let DOGE come in their building. When DOGE said we wanted to take a look at your financial books, they locked the doors. And DOGE actually had to hire enlist the U.S. Marshals to forcibly take over the building. And so they were sort of lauded by the left-wing media for The Guardian called them the little agency that could. They were standing up for their principles. They were David versus Goliath standing up to Elon Musk. But one of the things that Musk has said is when people get really mad at DOGE, it's probably because they just have something to hide. And sure enough, if you talk to the employees at this agency, that's what they'll tell you is absolutely. They locked the doors because their financial books are completely, essentially criminal.
Luke, how deep does the rabbit hole go with this kind of corruption in D.C.? Because the average person listening to this, it's not that they're shocked, but again, the details being laid out so nakedly, they're a lot to take in. Do you get the sense that there's a lot of this that's been going on?
Yeah, and I mean, so there were people from this agency who were going to the Inspector General, who were going to Congress and the Office of Special Counsel and anyone who would listen, saying all the things they were doing, how corrupt it was, how they were violating procurement rules and personnel rules. They were paying people with little strange LLCs to hide the money. They were essentially laundering money through Africa and back, doing all these things. Some of which were relatively easy to prove and cut and dry infractions. And nobody ever did anything. And so finally their general counsel said, you guys are breaking the law. You didn't even file these ethics disclosures. You're giving out money to your friends. You can't do this stuff. And he was a white guy. So they put him on leave. They cut off all of his access to records that he could use to prove their misconduct. And they wind up basically framing him for death threats. And so this is their general counsel. He's not like some crazy guy. He's like the top lawyer of this agency was on the record saying that they're basically criminals. And so the USAID didn't really do anything for years, which to your point, it raises the question of like, if all this stuff that was being brought to their attention didn't even, it wasn't even a priority, then was this just common across all of USAID stuff?
All right, I have to ask before I let you go, Luke. Elon is stepping down, as was always planned, and Russ Vogt is taking over, which I love, but that's a good thing, right? We're gonna keep doing this auditing stuff, right?
Yeah, Russ Vogt is amazing. The problem is Congress needs to actually cut the appropriations, because otherwise what's the point of removing all this waste if we're going to give these people the same amount of money anyway?
Yeah, no doubt. Luke, my brother, as always, outstanding work. All right. John Phillips is going to join us next, and we're going to talk about not just the Joe Biden cover-up. We're going to talk about 2028. I know what you're thinking. Why do we have, it's too early. It's not too early. It's 2025, halfway through it. Presidential campaign season kicks off in like 6 months. We are not far away from getting right back into it. I know. Isn't that kind of exhausting? But I want to know what's going on out there. Before we talk to John, let me tell you, YouTube channel worth subscribing to. It's free. I should probably stress that whenever I tell you about our YouTube channel. YouTube.com/@JesseKellyDC. I know that's a mouthful. Just take your phone and scan that there. It's free. We're not charging anybody for anything. We put little videos and things like that on there. Easy way to share stuff, enjoy some stuff. Go subscribe. All right. Talk to John Phillips next. I want to remind you that what the American did with the American, what the American media did with Joe Biden was evil. It was evil. It wasn't a mistake. They weren't duped. They covered for the fact that the United States of America did not have a functional president for 4 years. And that is a fact that we are still paying for to this day. There is a chance Joe Biden's disastrous presidency landed a mortal wound on this country. And the American media should have stopped it before it happened, should have exposed it while it was happening. But instead, they chose to cover it up. And now, look, the word chutzpah is a wonderful word. Now they're out there wanting you to buy books about it and claiming that they were simply lied to.
The bottom line is the White House was lying, not only to the press, not only to the public, but they were lying to members of their own cabinet. They were lying to White House staffers. They were lying to Democratic members of Congress, to donors, about how bad things had gotten.
The real culprits are the people who are supposed to be our sources on all these things, who were constantly reassuring us behind the scenes, no, it's better than you think.
But I
remember Jeffrey Katzenberg, he's going to be great at the debates. He's already debated this guy a couple of times. He knows what he's doing. He's out there telling, and this is in off-the-record settings. And you're like, really? Okay. I mean, so to me, the cover-up is the people closest to him in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, they covered it up. The dumbest, most uninformed people I know knew Joe Biden had dementia a long time ago. The American media covered it up. Don't let them get away with this. Joining me now, John Phillips, host of the wonderful John Phillips Show. Hey, John, they were just duped. These Washington, D.C. insiders, they had no idea at all. Man, I almost feel bad for them.
I love the fact that they act like this is some kind of secret when it was on television where he spoke to a dead person. We all remember that. It happened. I saw it. You saw it. They saw it. It's not like you need to sit next to him on an airplane for 10 hours to figure out that the guy has a screw loose. As soon as he had a full-on conversation with a dead person in public, the cat was out of the bag. Not to mention all the times he fell going up the stairs, fell on the stage, everything else that we saw on a daily basis. And the whole time this was going on, they'd claim, oh, that was a deep fake. That's what they said at the George Clooney fundraiser. That was a doctored video. That wasn't true. In private, you should see this guy. He's just putting Rubik's Cubes together, doing advanced calculus. The guy will blow you away in private. In public, he's a buffoon. But in private, man, this guy gives Stephen Hawking a run for his money. And we knew they were lying. They knew they were lying. But now all of the sudden, they're on TV saying, we were tricked. We were tricked. It was just the people around him in the White House that just snookered all of us. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to do CYA right now, because they're taking a position that's totally indefensible, saying that that guy was all there mentally. And you know what? We don't have to punish them. They don't have to punish themselves. In part because of their really bad behavior, they lost the election, because all the normal people understood the guy was demented. All the normal people understood that they lied to us, including Kamala. And I think that hurt her in the presidential election more than they're willing to admit. And now they have to sit at home and they have to watch Donald Trump on their television for 4 years. And I can't think of a better way to end that story.
It's so true. I'm pretty sure Stephen Hawking could have outrun the guy at this point in time. And it is funny. I think it's fascinating how much this is in the news. And it's not just because they're books. There are books that are being written. Democrat politicians are having to answer questions about this. Here was Chuck Schumer.
Did you really not have any idea that he was not fit to serve a second term?
Casey, we're looking forward. We have the largest Medicaid cut in front of us. We have the whole federal government at risk.
You're facing all of this because you lost a presidential election. And is that not Joe Biden's responsibility for deciding to run again?
We're looking forward.
That's it?
That's it.
We're looking forward, but they keep having to answer these questions. Why is this in the news, John? That's what I want to know. Is it because the media is trying to cover their butts? The Democrats are trying to cover their butts? Very clearly, they think this issue is still damaging to them, right?
Well, if they weren't the ones that wrote the books, there would be people who work for Joe Biden who would write tell-alls, and the story would come out that way. There's no way to put lipstick on the pig. They lied on behalf of Joe Biden. They lied on behalf of Joe Biden because they wanted him to win the election and the Republicans to lose. There's no way to make them look good. So I guess they figured, why not just go ahead and profit from it by putting our names on the tell-alls and not the Biden staffers who would end up writing these books. But what people like Chuck Schumer did in particular, and Nancy Pelosi, and Barack Obama and the Democratic Party apparatus, was even more sinister than what you described. Because don't forget, they rigged their primary so that Joe Biden would be the nominee. They changed the calendar so that Joe Biden couldn't lose. They knocked people off ballots. They canceled the primary election in Florida. They never actually voted in the primary in Florida. There's no need to have an election here. We know it's going to be Joe Biden. So it wasn't even just that they covered up for him. They put their fingers on the scale of the process so that no one could challenge him and no one could defeat him and no one could expose him for being as out of it as he was. This is not Joe Biden screwing the Democratic Party. This was a choice that they made to stick with Joe Biden, in part because they thought Kamala was so awful and unelectable, but they all controlled him. They benefited from him being in that feeble state, and they all got what they want, because this was essentially 4 years of the country being run by committee, of essentially being made up of the power players within the Democratic Party.
Golly. Speaking of screwing the Democratic Party, you recently had Willie Brown on your show. What did he have to say?
He said very interesting things, including the fact that he said that in a private conversation with Kamala Harris, back when she was a U.S. senator, and this was before Joe Biden chose her to be the vice president, when she knew she was on the list and she knew that it was a possibility that she could be tapped by Biden to be put on the ticket, he told her not to do it. He said, you're not ready. This would not be a good move for you. You should try to become the attorney general or become a different cabinet official, stay in the United States Senate, whatever. Let the cookie bake in the oven a little bit longer. And she got really mad at him and cut him off and decided, who are you, Willie Brown, to tell me what to do? I'm going to accept the vice presidency, which she did. And then she ended up becoming the Democratic nominee and losing the election. And now she's damaged goods. And now Willie thinks that it's highly unlikely that she's going to be the Democratic Party nominee in 2028. And he said that had she listened to him and not taken the vice presidency, she'd be in the catbird seat right now, or as he said, still in the mix.
So who is going to be the 2028 guy? Is it Pritzker? Newsom? Is it the Rear Admiral Buttigieg? Who is it?
I'm not sure at this point, because that party right now is in complete disarray. You look at their polling numbers, and I don't recall a time where the Democrats as a party have polled so poorly as they are right now. And you look at these names that you just mentioned, whether it's Gavin Newsom, okay, right now we're in shambles here in California. Go ahead, try to run on that record. Good luck. Buttigieg, who cannot get any black support at all in the Democratic primary. Kamala Harris running again. Okay, she ran once before. She lost. She was not regarded, highly regarded by Democratic Party power brokers. So why would you run that horse again? Elizabeth Warren, okay, she's 900 years old and I don't know, maybe she'll want to spend more time with her family in the teepee. Bernie Sanders is also a dinosaur. And then you have the new crop where it's AOC, who's been traveling around the country with Bernie Sanders, and she fancies herself as a candidate for president. And Jasmine Crockett, who is their new star on social media, or Jasmine Effin Crockett, I guess I should say, because every time she goes on, she sounds like a dirty club comic. I don't know if any of those people match up well with J.D. Vance, particularly if the Trump administration has a successful term. I don't see how you run one of those horses and you beat him. If things go to hell, then, you know, any of them can win because you have two choices. But just looking at them on paper right now, I don't know. Maybe this is going to be something like 2008 or 1992, where someone who's basically unknown comes out of nowhere and wins. Maybe that's the possibility that could happen. But right now, I don't see any of their mentioned names looking particularly strong.
Well, I actually feel better. And I laughed. Thank you, John. Come back soon, brother. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And before I show you this video, I just want to clarify something about being in Congress. And it's not that I've ever been in Congress. I've tried twice. I ran for Congress twice and lost both times. But in so doing, I ended up going back and visiting D.C. and sitting in Congress, meeting members of Congress several times. And I know it's going to sound juvenile. I really genuinely know it is. But it was so boring. It's not at all fancy like you may think it is. It's not glamorous in any way. These people have to go to all these committee meetings. And don't think it's all the spicy stuff we get to show you on television, you know, screaming at Christopher Wray and all the confirmation hearing stuff. You're sitting there in these committee hearings listening to Dr. Nerd opine about, I don't know, the special grasshoppers in Mongolia or something like that. And these people look, they all look like they wanted to jump off a bridge when I was sitting in there. And actually, I asked some members of Congress who I've gotten to know, how is it? And almost verbatim, every one of them said, oh my gosh, you can't imagine how boring it is. So look, this video is hilarious. A bunch of Democrats fell asleep in committee today, but I'll tell you, I sympathize. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.